T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Yes, we are in the kitchen, and it is a very good evening to you and how you be at 9:04 Monday evening on your fan, New York City. Steve Summers here, you there on the other side of the kitchen at 345 Hudson, the one and only Paulie Rosenberg, and no, from the 1-877-337-6666, and of course, that'll be the number for another three-hour Monday schmooze right up until Sal Licata at midnight, right here on your fan, New York City. And we'll call this segment coming up a segment with Ralph Vacchiano of SNY. And Ralph, on this Monday evening, a little after 9, how the hell are you?
You know, I was much better until I flipped on the Mets game, but in general, I'm doing okay. How are you?
Well, I can say ditto, because during Bob's update, you know, and I can update from Bob's update, it is now 6-5. The Metro, I mean, right before the update, Ralph, I'm going, it's good to be king and having some fun with the Mets having a 5-2 lead. And then during my update, I'm hearing about Nolan Arenado off of Lucchese, 5-5. And then somebody by the name of Tyler O'Neill, a player to be named by about 23 years ago by his family, and he doubles in the go-ahead run. So in the bottom of the third inning, at a 6-5 St. Louis, when I thought maybe Wainwright, Adam Bleeping Wainwright, would be sent to the soap and the showers and the towel, and to the locker room, and then to go home. But 6-5 St. Louis. Are you, so you're a Met fan, are you, Ralph?
I am. You can probably hear the pain in my voice.
Yes, yes, yes. Which is another network we don't want to talk about at the moment. You with the SNY. Now, let me ask you this. We'll start with the New York Football Giants. And everyone is giving, and I think you too, I think I saw what you had to say as well, much like so many others, that we're going to give Dave Gettleman a very high grade, an A or an A-, B-plus in that area, because of what he did on this draft. And to me, I mean, let's start with where he was at number 11. Did he have any idea what Philadelphia and Dallas were planning on doing?
You know, I think he had to at least suspect what they were doing, if he didn't know outright, because most of us had heard leading up to the draft that the Eagles wanted to move up to possibly get one of those Alabama receivers. So I don't think he was caught by surprise. Okay. And I really do think that's why he worked so hard on that Bears trade, to have that kind of in his back pocket in case the Eagles did make that move. He had an alternative that you know, he might have liked even better.
And that certainly, with the draft capital to dive for, getting the Bears number one, and unless the monsters of the Midway, now with Justin Fields, are going to rewrite Chicago Bear history, that number one could be somewhere in the top 20, you can imagine.
It could be. It's supposed to be a very, very good draft. You know, it's going to be the first year in a couple of years where teams will have their chance to interview guys in person and you know, get the medical reports in person, which they believe is going to make the scouting even better. They think it's a terrific class coming out. A lot of guys, you know, got an extra year of eligibility, could go back and try to boost their stock a little bit. So he thinks, and a lot of GMs agree with him, that, you know, getting picks in 2022 is really important. And for him to get a first rounder, you know, teams don't give them up very easily. And I think he knew he could take advantage of a team that was, you know, the Chicago Bears, that were desperate to get up and get a quarterback.
Right. And here's another thing. I mean, how many college players were either opting out for personal reasons because of the pandemic, and the same with teams and the same with conferences?
Yep, exactly. You know, it all adds up to, you know, this was a difficult year for scouting. You know, last year was tough too, but this year was probably the worst one that they had to go through. And they just think, you know, the next year there's going to be more kids, more talented kids, and better information on them. And maybe they're wrong. You know, I don't know. But I haven't looked at the 2022 class, but they really, it seems to be universal around the NFL that they think it's going to be one of the better classes they've seen in years. And, you know, again, I think that factored into it. He knows this is, while the Giants hope to be a playoff team this year, they're still a few years away from championship contenders. So if he can get those future picks, all the better.
Okay, so he goes offense for the wide receiver. He was going to get a wide receiver. And we are hearing that were it not for such high-quality wide receivers, so many of them that went in the first round, that Tony might have been somebody to go in the first round. You always hear it's a steal of the draft, that he would have been a first-round pick had it not been for an injury, et cetera, ad infinitum. Would Tony have been a better selection for the New York Football Giants, Ralph Vacchiano of SNY? Would he have been a better selection in later rounds and the Giants better off going for the offensive line?
Well, I don't know that there was an offensive lineman that they liked down at 20, and I think we now know that Kadarius Toney was not going to get past the Jaguars. I think where were they picking, 25 or so? Okay. Urban Meyer had come out and he said that it broke his heart when the Giants took Toney. So he was planning on taking him. You know, so could the Giants have – the Giants wouldn't – if they had passed on Toney there, they weren't going to get him. Could they have gotten someone else? Mm-hmm. It's possible. There were some good receivers, but as far as the really explosive ones, you know, you're looking at obviously the three guys that were up at the top. You're looking at Kadarius Toney. You look at Elijah Moore, the guy the Jets got in the top of the second round.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what would have been left for the Giants in the middle of round two had they taken an offensive lineman at one. But, you know, if that was the case also, you know, they might not have taken that receiver, because I think they were thrilled to see that edge rusher, Azeez Ojulari, still sitting for them in round two as well. So could they have found a receiver if they had taken an offensive lineman? Yeah. Would it have been as good as Toney? I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about Ojulari, the kid out of Georgia. We know he had the arthritic knee. We read about that. The arthritic knee in high school. Dr. James Andrews does the examination. You got to figure he also looked at his elbows as well. What do you think? But he gave him a clean bill of health. That kid, I understand, Ralph Ojulari, is only 20 years old.
He's a young one, and he is a good one. He is fast. He is still developing. You know, there's nothing not to like about him. The Giants started to really fall in love with him early in the process. I had heard really early on, and I think a lot of people started reporting it as well, that he was a guy that they were eyeing as a possible first-round pick. And, you know, it was obviously, I think everybody thought, a bit of a reach to take him at number 11, but most of us thought that if they traded down in the first round, you know, once they traded down to 20, I thought, okay, maybe this is the time where they do take Azeez Ojulari. They see him as, you know, so good and so young, and, you know, he's just an explosive rusher off the edge in a way that they just haven't had that kind of guy in years. And the hope is the guy that, you know, can take some of the pressure on the other side of the field off of Leonard Williams and maybe make that pass rush really something special.
Yeah. And of course, as a previous caller, Ralph, had brought up, you could never have enough corners. And we know about Jackson. We know about Holmes from a year ago, Bradbury. Holmes from, I believe, the draft a year ago, and certainly Jackson towards the end of, or, well, not towards the end, but after he'd made so many other picks with the free agency, picking up Jackson, the kid from Tennessee, because what, the Titans didn't want to pick up his fifth-year option. So I guess that Gettleman, and he's right when he says it may take 3 years for all of us to really judge and grade the draft for pro and con. However, I don't know if Giants fans, even though he's right saying that, because the first year for rookies, an adjustment period, maybe they make a difference right away. Most of them don't. However, he's right when he says it may take 3 years for us to really be able to judge this draft. But I don't know if Giants fans want to hear 3 years before we find out whether these picks are going to be good or not. I think the Giant fan and certainly the Giants want some of these guys to make an impact right away.
Oh, I would definitely think so. They don't have to be stars necessarily right away, but certainly have an impact. The first-round picks to me, Kadarius Toney at number 20 is a guy that you can't wait 3 years to see him do something. These guys are stars. He's Ojulari has got to be a guy who comes in and puts up some sack numbers. I think they expect that of him. So, I agree with you. And Giants fans aren't going to be patient, and that's understandable. There's been a lot of losing, more so than patience with this draft. I think, Gettleman is right. He's had now three drafts in the secondary rebuilding process after his first year, which was just a disaster for him. We need to see these players that he's picked all along become what we expected. I mean, if this is just a mess of mediocre talent and they're, 7-10 or 8-9 and don't make the playoffs, that's not going to be acceptable to anyone, including Dave Gettleman's bosses. So, he needs all the players he picked to start showing something. And absolutely, he needs a couple of these guys to have an immediate impact. We've seen it before. Rookies can do that. It doesn't have to be taken over the team, but they can certainly have impact in select areas.
We are very fortunate on this Monday evening to be talking to Ralph Vacchiano, kind enough to give us a few minutes to reflect on the draft with both the Giants and the Jets. One question that has to do more with picking up Booker, the running back from the Raiders, who wasn't very good. And I was somewhat surprised they signed him in free agency, Ralph, when they had Gallman last year, who I thought was decent enough, doing the best he could, and that wasn't all that bad, filling in for Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought that Wayne Gallman showed some flashes and potential. And, look, he wasn't great, but look at the offensive line in front of him. I thought he was able to create his own lanes at times and take advantage of the little bit of holes that were in front of him. I thought he could be a guy that was a receiver out of the backfield. The only explanation I have is they believe that Deontay Booker is better. They saw a guy they liked better. They wanted to make a bid for him in free agency, and they got him. But I'm with you, and I think Wayne Gallman is now in San Francisco, where they use a good deep rotation of backs. I think, we probably haven't heard the last of him. I think he started to really kind of get his NFL feet under him a little bit and, could be a nice complementary player down the road.
Yeah. Who has a better chance of making a huge difference this upcoming season, Galladay or Toney?
I think Tony's got a pretty good chance to have a really big impact for the Giants. I think I think they're going to use him. And the Giants last year did not have any weapons. They did not have and really anything. They bring in, obviously, they bring in two with Galladay and Tony. And I think Tony's going to be special in terms of his explosiveness and the big plays and things. But if you're looking for overall numbers, I mean, Galladay is going to be their number one receiver. You know, he's a guy they're going to expect to have 70 catches, 1,100 yards, you know, sort of be that go-to guy. So I don't know that he's going to have the wow plays that Tony will have, or Tony should have, at least from what we saw in college. But, you know, Galladay is just going to be the main man in that offense. I don't think there's any question about that.
And Tony's more of a slot guy. I mean, Golden Tate is gone. But would Tony be lining up more in the slot, do you think, Ralph?
You know, I would think so. In college, he played everywhere. He played in the slot. He ran a little out of the backfield. He played on the outside. You know, given his, he's 6 foot, it's not small, but I think he's built a little more like a slot receiver. I think his quickness and explosiveness probably put him in that position, at least at the start. You know, the Giants have bigger receivers for the outside, but, you know, again, they can move them all over the place, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do.
All right, speaking of all those receivers and Galladay and Tony and Shepard and Slayton and even Hands himself, Evan Engram, and Kyle Rudolph also, who they, the tight end from with the Minnesota. Now it's really on Daniel Jones. It's like Gettleman and the Giants are saying to Daniel Jones, first of all, hold on to the football, make better decisions, and now we have plenty of targets, plenty of weapons for you, along with Barkley coming back. So now it's up to you to perform or else. Do you think that Daniel Jones is thinking like that and alone with his own thoughts?
Well, I think he should be. You know, I'm sure he's very confident in himself, and he's not too worried about it. But you know, there's no question; it's really a make or break year for him. And you know, he had some promise as a rookie. Last year was a step back. You know, I know he got hurt, and that was obviously a big factor. But even before he got hurt, he did not look good in any stretch. And now the big question is it because of him, or is it because he had a terrible offensive line? He didn't have the weapons. Saquon Barkley was hurt. Evan Engram was dropping his passes. All of that is fair. It's a factor. But, you know, that shouldn't be the case this year. There are more than enough players around him who can play. The line, we think, will be a little better. I mean, everybody's a year older. And, you know, I think the Giants hope that it'll be a little bit better. So, well, I think we'll find out. As long as he's healthy, we'll find out if Daniel Jones is for real and if the Giants were right. And if not, honestly, if it's another bad year, they're going to have to start thinking. You know, life comes at you fast in the NFL. They're going to have to start thinking about who the next guy is.
Yeah, there was, I believe, about a 2.5, why this sticks in my mind, about a 2.5 game stretch where he held on to the football, Daniel Jones held on to the football, made some decent decisions, not throwing into double coverage, that kind of thing. And when he was put down on the floor, held on to the football. And then he kind of lost it as far as with the ball security. So even though there was some improvement, there still was some issues, obviously, that totaled some god-awful numbers when it came to the fumbles and with the turnovers, with the interceptions, the whole thing. And also he's got to learn, even with that 80-yard run, he was lucky at the end of that 80-yard run against Washington, that he didn't fumble because he got hit hard and he goes in head first. So they got to tell him to start sliding like every other quarterback does on the run.
Yes, no doubt. You know, that's part of protecting the ball too. Don't, you know, you're supposed to just give yourself up. If you're a quarterback, don't get yourself hurt. Don't put yourself in a position where you can lose the ball. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I see a lot of quarterbacks in their younger days have trouble with. That'll come around. The decision-making will come around, you would think. You know, he's got to develop more of a pocket presence, too. You know, there's a lot that he's got to work on. That, you know, last year was a bit of a lost year for him, so he's got to work on it fast.
Did the New York Jets, did Trader Joe, did he make the right move with a very small town quarterback. Do you think it's going to be a culture shock for him to come to New York City with media guys like you questioning everything he does, as we all will be doing, Ralph? Do you think it is going to be something from Draper, Utah, not Provo, not Salt Lake? I didn't even know that Utah was a state until I was about 45 years old. Do you think it is going to be something he can handle seriously? So, coming from such a small town and such a small conference and such a non-football factory BYU, although we know about with the Steve Youngs, etc., and some players that have come from BYU, but not, it's not known as a football factory. Do you think he's going to be able to handle everything, Ralph?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've asked a bunch of people who know him and coached him that question, and they all say a variation of the same thing, which is, you know, you have to understand what kind of pressure quarterbacks are under at BYU. They're all expected to be Steve Young and Jim McMahon and, you know, Ty Detmer, who was at least a great college quarterback. Right. And all that's great. But, again, it's still BYU. It's, he's still from Utah, and it's still not New York, and the pressure and the weight of 50 years of Jets failures. So there's no doubt it'll be a culture shock. I mean, how could it not be? He's probably never seen the media this size. You know, the first mistake he makes is going to be the back page of three different newspapers in town. It's obviously, you know, plenty of talk radio and plenty of sports TV stations. You can't escape it the way I'm sure he could in Utah. So, yeah, it'll be a culture shock. Everybody who knows him thinks he can handle it. They think he's the right combination of, you know, confident but humble and takes criticism well and all of that stuff. So, you know, we'll see. It, you know, there's just no way to know until he gets here and has to deal with it.
And some of the callers that we had earlier in the program, Ralph, were talking about the Jets bringing in a veteran quarterback to start the season. And even though that may be a popular opinion among a number of Jets fans, my two cents worth, Ralph, I would want to start Zach Wilson right away and get that experience meter off and running.
Oh, I'm with you on that 100%. I would feel differently if he was taking over a mediocre team and that had a chance at the playoffs. I'd say, okay, well, you know, go get your Nick Foles or somebody like that. And, you know, he can learn and maybe they can get into the playoffs. But, like, this team was 2-14 last year. They're completely rebuilding. Right. The playoffs would be a stunner. To me, I'm in favor of get the young quarterback as many snaps, as many games as possible, and start the clock on his learning curve right from the very beginning. I think that, you know, I think they will go get a veteran quarterback at some point, but he's got to be on the bench. You know, let Zach Wilson start from day one.
Oh, sure. I like hearing that from you, a very respected voice, that's for sure. And Ralph Vacchiano is the voice you're hearing from SNY. You know, here's the thing. We know the catchphrase with Robert Saleh is all gas, no brakes. But I think with this draft, you know, maybe Robert Saleh in the first four picks for the Jets wanted Joe Douglas to go on the defensive side. And for the first time ever with the Jets, it is four consecutive offensive players. So we know that if Robert Saleh wanted to provide some input with those first four picks, I guess it was Joe Douglas telling him to take his foot off the gas and apply the brakes.
Yeah, I think that deep down somewhere, Robert Saleh probably wanted to see a defensive lineman, a pass rusher. I got to believe he definitely wanted to see a cornerback, which I think is a big need for the Jets. Sure. They actually, it really stunned me, in fact, that they didn't take one in the first four rounds. You know, I know that they lost their two third-round picks. That's probably where they would have ended up taking one. But, you know, in general, after what we watched for the 3 years of Sam Darnold and what he was surrounded with, I can't argue with the strategy of once you draft a young quarterback, load up on the talent around him. Get the offensive lineman, get a receiver, get him a running back, get him whatever he needs and wants to give him the chance for success that Sam Darnold never had. I think, you know, they just learned that lesson from those 3 years, and again, I could nitpick and say, yeah, there should have been a pass rusher in there. There should have been a corner in there. But I get what they're trying to do, because if that quarterback doesn't succeed, they're just going to be right back here 3 or 4 years from now. So set him up for success before you do anything else.
Well, in round five, Jason Pinnock, you could compare him. He's a corner, number seven, 175 overall, and maybe he'll be compared to Darrell Revis only because with Darrell Revis, he too went to Pittsburgh. Maybe this guy will turn out to be as good as Revis was, Ralph.
You never know. You can certainly hope. I don't know that I would count on that, but it's certainly a possibility. I tell you what the Jets are doing with him, with Michael Carter, the safety corner from Duke, even the couple of guys they're bringing back, Bryce Hall, Bless Austin. I think they're just taking a bunch of young guys. They're going to throw them into the mix, hope a couple of them develop as their starters. And, look, we've seen fifth-round picks, later picks do it before, so anything's possible. But I'm not so sure they got the next Revis in there anywhere.
Yeah. We know that if Adam Gase was still around, the quarterback whisperer when people could hear him speak, nobody understood what the hell he was doing or talking. The bottom line is that with Zach Wilson, now this is just my 2 cents worth, Ralph, and my intuition here with Robert Saleh and LaFleur, that they, with this rookie, are going to put him, as any coach would try to do, but I think they're going to be able to do a little bit better job than some previous Jet regimes by putting Wilson into good situations, better situations, more positive situations to succeed. I think the Jets will look so much different offensively, with the guys in formation, a guy's deception, a little misdirection, a little read option, a little bit maybe even a wildcat. I'm just saying that the offense may look a little bit different than the usual three and out that we are used to seeing on too many occasions over the last couple of years with Sam, and for the most part in Jets history with some of the quarterbacks that they have had trying to replace a Joe Namath from so long ago. But I think Saleh and LaFleur are going to make it, I hope, easier for Zach Wilson to make his adjustments.
Yeah, I hope so, because I feel like I've watched nothing but three and outs for the last 3 years. So it'll be a nice change of pace. We're basing that on the fact that Mike LaFleur is running the Kyle Shanahan offense from San Francisco. And we all saw that worked well out there. It was not a system that relied on Jimmy Garoppolo to carry them. It was run-based, and they, got a running back committee and found ways to create offense, and they were creative with the way they used their receivers and tight ends and everything else. So, I'm not an expert in this, but the people who saw Zach Wilson at BYU believe that his skills translate well to that 49er scheme, that it's, he's going to be able to do the things that LaFleur, in the Shanahan system will ask of him. So all of that is good. If he'll be the fit, they won't have to rely on him. I think that, Adam Gase's offense needed the quarterback to really, he didn't love his running backs. He needed that quarterback to, make perfect throws, make him on the run, make great reads all the time. It was a lot of pressure on Sam Darnold, and he couldn't always handle it. That pressure is not going to be on Zach Wilson from the start. They're going to find other ways to move the ball. And I think you're exactly right. They'll find ways to put the young guy in the best situations, and over time we'll give him more and more. And, that's the way it's supposed to work. It's not supposed to be the rookie carrying you from the start. Robert Saleh was, quoted, he was caught on camera talking to Zach Wilson. And I think what he told him was, you don't have to lift us, we'll lift you. So that's kind of the philosophy, that the team will carry Zach Wilson at the start, and we'll see what happens down the road.
Elijah Moore, the kid from Ole Miss, And he's only like 5'8 or 5'9. I read, Ralph, that he's maybe 178 pounds soaking wet, but with lightning speed, and caught over 80 passes at Ole Miss for over 1,100 yards, Ralph, in only 8 games?
He's crazy good. And, you know, as the draft got closer and closer, and I talked to scouts, and they mentioned, you know, guys that were theoretically rising up boards, who would hear his name more and more, and everybody thought he was a first-round talent, that he's just, you know, yeah, there's, I'm sure, some concern in some places that he's only 5'9", 178, but he runs a 4.3, he's tough as nails, he can take a pounding over the middle. You know, you got to catch him first. He's got moves to get away from people. You know, just an explosive, explosive guy. And I think, you know, teams will always say, oh, I was surprised he was sitting there that long. I think the Jets were generally stunned that he got out of the first round. And I think a lot of people were. He was, you know, a first-round ability. Had he been maybe a little bit bigger, he would have been a lock for the first round. So, you know, there's a lot of people since the draft that have said, you know, this guy could be a breakout star if he's used right in that offense.
If he lines up in the slot, for the sake of conversation, does this mean that the days and nights are numbered for Crowder?
Well, yes. Now, whether that's immediate or at the end of the year, I don't know. You know, his salary cap number is large. It gets larger next year. I would think that if Elijah Moore turns out to be as good as expected, that at the very least they would cut Crowder at the end of the season. You know, the Jets have so much cap room now and not really a need to clear any. They don't have to cut Jamison Crowder. They, you know, they can keep him and, you know, work him into rotation with Elijah Moore. Let the better guy play. You know, just have the extra receiver to be creative with. And that's kind of the way I would go, at least for this year, because, you know, we saw last year, once the injuries hit, you know, they were going and signing the Chris Hogans of the world off the street, or, you know, had undrafted rookies who would have to start a receiver. You don't want that. Now you've got a core of Corey Davis and Keelan Cole and Denzel Mims and Elijah Moore and Jamison Crowder. You're deep now. You can really be creative with how you use them. So I'm fine with keeping both of them this year. I think that's what the Jets will end up doing. But, you know, I think even Crowder knows that this is probably his last year with the Jets, you know, unless Moore's a bust that no one expects he'll be.
You mentioned Corey Davis, and you know he's going to be targeted quite a bit, the now former Tennessee wide receiver. And in free agency, the Jets picked up a guy who is very familiar getting into somebody else's backfield, this Carl Lawson, who was with the Bengals. And the bottom line is he, with all that they have done, I mean, the draft is always a crapshoot, we understand. But with free agency, this guy Lawson, when I was reading about him, is that he was one of the leaders in the NFL, not in sacks. He only had about 5.5 of those. But he was one of the leaders in quarterback hits, so and pressures. So, I mean, obviously, that is going to help the Jets quite a bit. I know, you know, if he's an outside linebacker or defensive end, I think for Cincinnati, he was in both spots. But the bottom line is, I think he's going to make a positive difference. We don't hear too much about Carl Lawson.
You know, I think the Jets saw in him what the Giants saw in Leonard Williams a couple of years ago. Okay. They see a guy who is not getting the sacks, and it's putting him under the radar and putting him under pressure, but everything else is there. He gets that pressure. He's disruptive. He's close to the quarterback. He makes the quarterback move. You know, it's the same things that we used to hear about Leonard Williams, and he always said the sacks would come, and sure enough, in the right scheme and used the right way, the sacks came for him. I think the Jets see this guy the same way. They think that, you know, they can get him that extra inch to turn that pressure into sacks. But even if they don't, you know, it's not just about the sacks. It's about disrupting the quarterback, making him throw quickly, making him move out of the pocket. He does all those things. And to me, you know, that was one of the best free agent signings they had. And I was all in favor of all the weapons they could add and everything else. But, you know, to me, they added one of the best defensive ends on the market, and a guy that, you know, they got him relatively inexpensively. And we know that from San Francisco, Robert Saleh's defense is built on that strong, fast offense or defensive line. Well, you know, Carl Lawson's the anchor of it now. And I think that, you know, I don't think the Jets have had a pass rusher like that in years.
I think Saleh and LaFleur coming along with him, great moves on the part of the Jets. I mean, listen, he's never been a head coach before, we understand. But the energy, the fire, the inspiration, the motivation, he gets the best out of his team and his players. And you got to believe that he's going to be teaching Jets defenders with different looks and different schemes, and within you, we might see a 3-8, you know, to go along with your 4-3s and your 3-4s, etc., etc. I couldn't have been more excited, Ralph, when they hired him, and he brings along LaFleur. Now, the defensive coordinator comes from Atlanta. What do you know much about him? Was he a linebackers coach? And then I think he took over as defensive coordinator for the Falcons a little bit. I don't know too much about him.
Yeah, you're talking about Jeff Ulbrich, their defensive coordinator. Right. He was, he took over. He was a linebackers coach and an assistant head coach at one point. And I think last year, this was last year when they had their coaching change, he was promoted to defensive coordinator. You know, he's known Robert Saleh for a long time. And, you know, Robert Saleh trusts him. But maybe more importantly, he's going to be running Robert Saleh's defense. You know, they basically share the scheme. You know, you're not going to lose, even if he's making the calls on defense, you're not going to lose Robert Saleh's input in it, his fire, his passion, you know, his knowledge of defense. I think that, you know, there's going to be some collaboration on that side of the ball, which will definitely help.
You think LaFleur will get somebody to play fullback? Because the fullback worked in with the Niners, so they're going to need a fullback to go along with everybody else in the backfield.
I haven't looked to see who's available, but I know they needed to add to that whole backfield. You know, when they really just had, you know, it was LaMichael Perine and Ty Johnson. You know, they brought in Tevin Coleman, but he was hurt all of last year. This is why I was glad they grabbed Michael Carter in the fourth round. They need running backs and fullbacks. And you know, it doesn't matter what you classify them. They love to use their backs out of the backfield, and they'll use a lot of them. And, you know, sometimes with the 49ers, it wasn't big free agents. It wasn't high draft picks. It was waiver claims and, you know, undrafted free agents. So I'm sure that there's somebody that they have on their radar that we're not even thinking of that could end up being a key factor for them. But, you know, they'll find one at some point, and they'll find a way to use them.
I wanted to ask you about one move that the Jets did make. The former Saint, Sheldon Rankins, I know he's been hurt a lot. Was that a good move to pick him up if he's healthy? I'm sure he can help the Jets' defense. Was this a good move, or was this the kind of move you make, you know, low risk, high reward?
Well, I think it's both. You're talking about a former first-round pick who is 27 years old, I think, still. You know, off of the radar for everybody because, you know, he had a knee injury last year. I think he had an ankle injury the year before, you know, was a good player before that, you know, was a solid, big defensive tackle, you know, could push the pocket a little bit, could stop the run, could do all the things you want. Okay. You know, I know they signed him to 2 years, $16 or $17 million. Okay. You know, they have the cap room, so I don't even care. Maybe it's a little much to take a risk on a guy who had been injured a lot, but they got the cap room, so who cares? You know, I think the potential reward could be very big. They could find a guy who's going to be their starter defensive tackle next to Quinnen Williams for, you know, the next 3 or 4 years, and that's great. You know, if it doesn't work out, oh, well, you move on next year. But, you know, I think Robert Saleh wanted that defensive line built up. You know, you got Carl Lawson and brought Vinnie Curry in. on the other side. And, you know, he's 33 years old. Maybe he's got 1 year left in him. You needed somebody in there with Quinnen Williams to help out. And I think that, again, given his health, as long as Rankins is healthy, he could be a very big piece to what Robert Saleh is trying to do.
Yeah, I hope so. You got to love what Joe Douglas. Joe Douglas, you think he's aggressive, Ralph?
Yeah, just a little bit. I can't even now, though, say that he's the most aggressive general manager in New York after what Trader Dave Gettleman did during the draft. But
that's right.
It's hard to keep track of these two guys.
Yeah, you're not kidding. All right, a final thing, and I'll let you go. And a million thanks for such time you've given us tonight and in the past as well. The Aaron Rodgers situation, is a bluff going to be called here? Is he going to leave, or is the general manager going to leave? Is he going to play for the Packers? Is he going to take over for Alex Trebek? What's going on with the Aaron Rodgers?
Well, I would call his bluff because I don't believe for a second that he's going to retire. and, you know, I guess if he does and you call his bluff and he walks out, you know, who's more important to the team in Green Bay, the general manager or the three-time MVP quarterback? At some point, if really all it takes is firing the general manager, you have to do it. You got to keep Aaron Rodgers. You don't trade a guy like that, even if you think you've got a young quarterback you like. It just will disrupt everything about your franchise. But you know, in general with these things, I felt this way with Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson. There's a lot of off-season noise. They're making it public for a reason that they don't want to be there. There's something that, you know, they're unhappy about, and the team has to figure out a way to fix it. But in the end, how long have the Jets been looking for a quarterback? How hard has it been for the Giants to find one? Mm-hmm. If you've got one of these guys, you don't give them away. It's organizational suicide. So I don't think he's going anywhere. If I were the owner or the committee of owners in Green Bay, I would call his bluff and say, you know, do what you want. If really you want to quit football, go ahead. But if I called his bluff and then he called mine, the general manager would be out the door in about 30 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't think Jordan Love is the answer?
Well, I don't think so. I'm sure they like him, but, you know, to expect him to be the next Aaron Rodgers would be like a, you know, 5,000 to one shot, even if he's a good quarterback. So, yeah, I don't know that I would trust my playoff ready team with Jordan Love just yet.
And I think I know how you might answer this. What is the worst call? Was it with Seattle on the less than 1 yard line from winning the Super Bowl and not giving it to Marshawn Lynch, or Green Bay on fourth down going for the field goal and not giving their Hall of Fame quarterback a chance to score 7?
Wow, that's a tough one. I'm still going to have to go with Marshawn Lynch not getting the ball, because I think that if you took a poll of everybody who's watching the game, it would be about 150 million people saying, give it to Marshawn Lynch, and Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson saying, throw the ball. So I'll go with that one. But that's two pretty disastrous ones right there.
Yes. Ralph, what a pleasure. I can't thank you enough. You've elevated and given the program credibility. And
I don't know about that.
Yes, I do. And, Ralph, I can't thank you enough. You're just the best, and we look forward to what you have to say, as we used to look forward to all that you used to write. And you're very gifted and a very, very talented guy, and your voice is heard and respected by all of us in the opinion business. So I can't thank you enough for a good 40, 45 minutes already talking about the two New York football teams. Stay safe and sound and healthy forever, Ralph, and thanks a lot again.
My pleasure, Steve. Thanks for the kind words, and happy to come on anytime.
Okay. Ralph Vacchiano of SNY.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
It's better over here.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.